the morning walk. Do 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 do. Well, I had that interview yesterday. Oh, I feel like such a fool when I do this stuff. These are just distractions from probably what I should be doing. So I'm seeing this stuff through. And, I don't think I'm going to be off the job. You know, frankly, this job switching stuff, I think I'm too old. It's a sad thing to say at 45, and I guess it is true. When I first started these little ventures in the first place, you know, about either going to Shetland or making a big move, I always felt like this would be my last chance to do that. And I think that's proven to be right. Strangely, usually I'm off. But I need to spend some time, more time, on what I need to be doing. You know, my writing. Not writing for writing's sake, you know, philosophical stuff, I suppose. Not really even philosophical. But get into something, you know, thinking about family, not so much family sovereignty, but family power. I never even got a really good word for it. I need to come up with a good word for it, and work on that. Family centricity. So many instrumentalities want to be at the center of life or feel that they deserve to be at the center of life. You know, whether it's government or, you know, I was reading an article, or I looked at the headline of an article, poked around it a little bit, but I'm always quite, I don't have to read very far before I just get disgusted and throw it aside. You know, schools want a better interface with parents, but it's always cast as the school, as the powerful entity. You know, the one that really does make the larger difference and is more important in a child's life than parents are. You know, it's difficult and that the most important thing is school success, but the most important thing is what school provides, that families are just almost adjuncts to it, you know. The people that make sure your teeth are brushed in the morning. You know, it used to be that parents were in charge of making sure a child was properly fed and ready to go to school. Now that's being taken more and more away. And, you know, and this article that I was looking at was yet another in a long string of parents as partners articles. You know, they're important partners in their education. You go, no, schools are inferior. Schools will always be inferior. You know, study after study after study after study tells us that home life and attitudes of your parents and things like that have much more long-lasting effect on children and on the adults they become than school ever will. But you have to understand, schools have far more money than parents do. They have the air of government like families don't. It's all these things. And, you know, so institutionally, it kind of becomes a really quite it's really trying to become dominant, you know. The whole concept of full day school, of trying to be more of a wraparound life thing, feeling like a kibbutz is really, you know, many people in education want to go in that direction. They feel like that in the standard measures of school performance that will help it, you know, that family time and parents are more of an impediment to what these things are done. It's a very common idea among those who are distrustful of individuals and families by nature, you know, that say to themselves, we don't want to, oh my God, I'm getting a little breeze here. I'm going to seal up the bottom part of my jacket. You know, when you listen to, like, say, John Taylor Gatto, for instance, and some of his research has brought out these things that big people like Carnegie and Horace Mann and things like that, their ultimate vision of all of us kind of devoid of family and brought into institutions, and that, you know, their belief that the better world could be created by tearing children away from family and institutionalizing, basically, you know, and that the first battle that had to be waged, and I don't know if it's being won or not, the first battle to be waged is to have the institution of school win over the family conglomeration. In some places it's more, you know, the victory is more stark. You know, I've never known a school person that liked homeschooling, you know, always kind of poo-pooed homeschooling. There are some isolated cases where they don't. You have to understand, it threatens the teacher's livelihood. It threatens the kind of efficiency and economy that school strives for, you know. And you have to understand, life, much of life, much of the purpose of life, much of everything that is worth having is lost in the drive for efficiency. Public schools, I know they fail miserably at it, but it's always their striving or at least that was one of the original concepts that encouraged it, was the efficient education of children. You know, it wasn't efficient to have children schooled by their parents. You know, they weren't forming a unified culture. You know, there's all kinds of justifications for why the school model, you know, and schools have an excellent job of saying that they are the only way that a child can be educated, that there are no other models for it. A patent lie. But nonetheless, one that's been used very effectively over the years. Your child doesn't go to school, oh, he'll never accomplish anything. And you go, what? And you go, school is but one methodology for getting this done. I said it doesn't, you know. There's no evidence that says there's the best, because very little research is ever tolerated that tries to objectively compare, you know, modern schooling to any other methodology of educating people. We have the nice fortune that, at least on the college level, many different modalities are starting to appear, because thank goodness there are many private colleges that force public institutions to behave in a more competitive manner to address the needs of people, what they want to accomplish. It forces them into different modalities that they probably would prefer not to get into. But, you know, I said it's just life. It's just the way things are. You know. And it's interesting that it ultimately ends up being profit-making motive that makes this happen, you know. But some people really poo-poo the profit-making motive, but you go, you know what? If you didn't have the profit-making motive, you would lose, you know, schools would still be basically the entrenched, you know, ivory towers for rich kids that they were for quite a while, you know. There's one theme. It only comes up once in the Book of Mormon, but it's set forth in a rather interesting way. In 3 Nephi, it talks about the inequality of people and how bad that was. And one of the big ways that they were considered unequal is their chances for learning. You know, only those from certain families, certain money, were given the ability to have chances for learning to expand themselves. and that this was considered to be a terrible thing, you know. And I think at its heart, well, you know, there's different hearts when it comes to schooling, I think. I think one of them is an attempt to level things, but not, you know. I think people realize that the kind of nobility sort of way of looking at things, you know, of saying that that the best people only come from certain families, has been, you know, has always proven to be, you know, not very true. And I have to say that on the level that the profit motive seeks and wants the best people, you know, that this is where scholarships for poor people that show great promise came from, you know. And you go, oh, well, that's kind of a selfish way of looking at it. And you go, oh, yeah, that's more likely than any other reason why this is done, you know. We don't give scholarships to poor, stupid people because we feel like giving them a better education is a waste of money, that they will not, that it will mostly be money lost on them. You know, this is kind of what comes of, what is it, the Pell Grant. The Pell Grant, which does not have it doesn't have strong criteria for if you've been successful in school before, you know. You know, everybody gets that money as long as they're not just absolute failures. And that's kind of the criteria. You know, the grade point average for having a Pell Grant is tragically low. And sadly, these kinds of things are predominantly only available to those who have gone to the public school system, who are able to do at least passingly well in that environment. So even though it is an effort to try and help people, we only give one modality of doing things, and people either succeed or fail within that construct, you know. You know, you've got me how other ways you're supposed to do it and how you would measure that. You know, school is interesting, you know. I think it's kind of a middle-of-the-road sort of place. You know, you can get some wild hairs, some radicals in there that go in other directions that helps one group or another, or, you know, with trying to warp school into something that might serve one group or another better. And, you know, I am a proponent for deinstitutionalizing these things. You know, we need to come up with better evaluation techniques for determining who gets, that's also trying to find a way to get people help that's institutionalized, you know. (Clears throat) I do believe that those who show promise should not be curtailed in a financial way from being able to attain more knowledge. I think knowledge, I think a really wonderful thing that we're starting to see is that knowledge is starting to be made available to everyone to use as they would see fit. That just as much as like the internet and computers make make things like family history work, you know, much more available, much more accessible to a lot of people, but it also makes knowledge more available, you know. And and that we've spent so much time and effort trying to bring young minds or whatever, little minds full of mush. I don't have that philosophy particularly, but to bring people to education, you know, as if knowledge and information is stored in some building, and you have to pay the gatekeeper for entry into the building. You know. And we were always constantly coming up trying to fight and find ways to make to open up the doors more of these institutions to more people. This is what I find fascinating, is that technology is actually going in the other direction. It's actually taking knowledge and information out of the ivory towers and making it available to anyone any kind of network device, you know, iPad, whatever. And that's wonderful, you know. I guess the most important thing for all of us to do, you know, it used to be the thing that we needed to keep journals, you know, among the LDS people, that this would become important to our children. Now it's morphing into more of an electronic thing, although if you leave that in the cloud, it becomes kind of imminently losable. You know, I still prefer rendering to paper ultimately. You know, you can have it in both forms. I think it makes sense to do it on a computer, and then one of your output techniques, along with like putting it up on a blog or putting it into a web page. I know these ideas are getting a little archaic. Is that you print them out in paper form, stick them in, you know, stick them somewhere so people can actually read them, because, you know, data gets lost as we use these abstract methods to pass on this information, that it's much more important to give it some real physicality, something that's less likely to be, you know, to be lost to tripping over a plug or, you know, catastrophic hard disk failure, stuff like that. So, anyway, that knowledge is more is more available now than it ever has been. And that the ivory towers are struggling to find purpose in a place where most information, most knowledge can be obtained quite readily from other sources. And much cheaper, you know. And that I'm a fan of certifying bodies. Like most of my computer knowledge and time has been certified through, you know, taking a test certification. And good morning. And so, you know, there's this, I like to see that done more generally. You know, there is a bit of an institutional, well, we control this stuff. We decide when someone is allowed to have a degree in this or in that. And I'd like to see that process somewhat disappear. That years of being sequestered in an educational institution, you know, doesn't necessarily mean anything. The attendance of classes doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, the fact that you made this grade and this grade and this grade. You know, an interesting question that another one that John Tarigetto brings up is, do you know what grades your doctor made? Your medical doctor, you know, your physician. Do you know what grades he made in school? Would you be frightened to know, you know, if he was basically a C student, how would you feel about your doctor? Is that the criteria by which you would choose a doctor, is the one that made the best grade? And it's hard to say. We don't allow that kind of scrutiny on people like that, you know. It basically ends up, even though on each individual class you may be graded and receive a letter grade or a number grade or some other evaluation, ultimately these degrees become pass-fail, you know. Either you met the requirements of the course of study or you did not, you know, certified or not. Now, I know of no other way to really do things like that. You know, there's some political fight back on the whole attitude of saying, okay, we need to have different grades of these people. And you go, okay, well, do people who were an A-level doctor, do they get charged more? You know, does it all of a sudden become this whole thing of you get better health care if you have more money? You know, and you know, there's certain societal forces on both sides of it. You know, I freely say that I'm kind of a laissez-faire capitalist sort of a guy that says, yeah. He says, which is mostly just acknowledging reality the way it is and not sitting there and trying to fight it, you know, by saying, well, you know, you know, and instead of trying to force this kind of beautiful, classless, you know, quasi-communistic sort of universe, where you basically get assigned a doctor, and they may be a good doctor, they may be a bad doctor, but you really don't. Number one, you know, the system tries to make it so, like, number one, you don't know, and number two, you know, you don't have much of a choice. But this doesn't, help matters any. You know? That the best and the brightest leave such systems and find other systems. You know, the whole worldwide socialism idea was that it wouldn't really, you know, one of its first goals is it isn't really going to work until we destroy all other forms but ours. Because as long as you can go to a place where money and talent and other things that differentiate us matter, as long as there are such places, those who tend to have more money, those who tend to have more ability, those who tend to excel beyond others around them will strive to go to those places to reap the rewards of simply being better. You know, is that basically a good thing? I don't know. What I do know is it's reality. You know, do we want a perfectly beautiful socialistic system? If it could be done, well, yeah, I don't trust mankind to do this well. I trust mankind to manipulate this thing for it to ultimately fall down to being, you know, my family has more clout in the socialistic system, so therefore my kids get first dibs on things that they would like, you know, and, you know, when it comes to leveling, especially among traditional people, you're never going to get it. You know, it's never going to get there. It doesn't matter how much you want such a thing. And it really has not to do with institutions and laws and things like that. It really doesn't have to do with people. As long as we have people that don't really like sharing and don't really, you know, and are always constantly trying to get one leg up on somebody else or trying to be better than other people, you know, the system's going to fall apart. And it always will consistently. You know, it depends on having a group of people that say, yeah, you know, this is where this guy's talents are. Let's see if we can steer him into these kinds of pursuits so that he can reach his full potential and find joy in reaching that potential. But also that other people can, you know, that other people enjoy the fruits of that as well, you know. The basic concept of leveling is a good godly one, but the way it gets done needs to be a lot different than what we've been able to come up with, you know. Our tendency is to institutionalize these things, and that everything is suddenly beholden to the institution. You know, so that's where school comes in, you know. School is much more important. Families are adjunct to school. School is all important. All money needs to flow to schools. Schools would probably love it if all government benefits and stuff like that flowed through schools, so schools could be kind of the gatekeeper and would have the power to enforce what they think families or individuals should be doing. You know, it would be a tempting thing to do because, you know, oh, well, you know, the most important thing to getting any of this stuff accomplished is education, right? And you go, well, it is a big component. What are you doing? Why are you standing and sitting? Good golly, you kicked me off 5 times. Oh, well, that's all right. I'm always interested in people and cars and how they behave. But it's okay. People are people. They'll do what they want to do. I can look at it as a kindness that they aren't going to accidentally run me over. I appreciate that. But they didn't, you know. Anyway, so there's a car coming by trying to get into the school. I'm walking around the school right now. Okay. Brings up the whole thing of school. You know. You can have... I'm also walking past one of our larger public housing things riddled with crime and problems and excessive people. You know. The two institutions feed off of each other a little bit, to be honest. I'll be honest. Now, this doesn't count. I'm speaking of the institution, not of individual people within it. There are some wonderful people in the education racket. Grateful that there are good people in it. If this is how society's chosen to do these things, I'm glad that there are good and upright people who are associated with them. But school feeds on brokenness. You know, when schools want to tout how valuable they are, they will bring out broken people that they have improved, you know. Because you can show that. Look at what they did when they first came here. Boy, they could hardly even speak. You know, their home lives were so horrible. And they said, look what we were able to do just by paying a little attention to them. And through our wonderful methodology. And that's what kind of justifies many of the interesting things that schools do, is those horribly broken families. You know, if other children, ones that didn't come from broken families, you know, teachers love those people because they make the teacher look good with a minimal amount of effort. You know, compliant children. I'm not decrying being compliant. But it ends up being used as a tool for the aggrandizement of the institution rather than what the institution is really there for, which is the raising of people. I think far too many children go to public education. Those who would excel in any circumstance, those who would learn just as much by going out and fishing than they do sitting around in a school classroom, you know, the fact that laws are written to force them into those institutions, whether it's really in their best interest or not, in some altruistic need to try to level things, and you go, no, we want capable people to be as capable as they can be. We want to, you know, if people have wings, let them fly. Don't keep them grounded because we're trying to treat everybody the same. I said, equal treatment, I think, is a bad thing. You know, laws should treat you equally. That's why you shouldn't have very many laws. Because you need to let various people, you know, some people need as much freedom as they can have. They will do amazing things that you could never conceive of. When you stick them in a school, you take away, to a large extent, that ability. You know, you're being put through a mill. You know, the nature of the mill is to take something of lesser value and try to improve it. You have to understand that as you mix in better quality, it drags down the quality. You know, if you're milling wheat, you've got a lot of inferior wheat. You can throw in a few grains of better wheat and make the whole mix look better. That's why I'm not in favor of, you know, most testing today is not, well, much of the newer testing that's been put out is not testing of children in order to ascertain the level of children and what should, you know, toward their betterment and improvement. Most of the newer testing is put in place to evaluate schools as a whole. And it makes the institution behave very bizarrely. Number one, it wants low-performing children to stay home. You know, well, if you get sick, let's see if we can blow some nasty disease around the air vents. You know, it's very easy to see that children from worse environments that tend to do poorly on tests are also typically not in very good shape physically. And if you put some low-grade illness and blow it around in the ducting system, those kids will likely be sick on the day that testing is done, and therefore your aggregate score is likely to rise. You know, it's sick. It's more of a statistical trick rather than trying to look at reality. But the reality shown by such things is meaningless. You know, trying to measure how good, quote, good a school is in general is foolishness. Because just because your school scored well on these, you know, generalized grade the school sort of tests, doesn't mean that school is going to perform well for your child. You know, it ends up being a very, very sad measure. And the more comprehensive you try to make the evaluations, to try to catch, to try to eliminate more and more of shimming or doing this and that, to try to get a better score, to try to look like a better school, or to try to catch people who you say, well, this is a really crappy school, but they score really good on our standardized test. Said, the more you simply render, you know, the more you fall into the trap of institutional hucksterism. We had institutional huckster here. I won't be shy about saying who he was. His name was Reince, and he was an institutional huckster. First time I met him, I said, "This is a snake oil salesman." you know, he lies, he cheats, he steals. I said he was the perfect organizational monster. His greatest skill was he was able to game a system. And he did it well. And that's why he was a superintendent here for a reasonable period. The only way they finally got rid of him, because he was a strange and spooky person, that would use any technique and any arsenal to retain his position, to increase his income, to consolidate his power. His guy came up with the whole idea that all the county schools should be one school district, and of course that was with the intention that he would be the superintendent of all the schools and get a pay increase and homogenize everything to his way of thinking. The only way that they got rid of him was because he was a drinker. And, you know, there's a bit of a manhunt to catch him drinking and driving, which he did. You know, he wasn't a very good person as far as I'm aware of. And, you know, this is the attractive thing for institutions. Institutions want to win, and they don't care how they win. In whatever battle they end up being forced into, whether it's cowing parents into doing their will, whether it's, whether it is, promoting opportunistic teachers that work harder at skewing test results to the school's favor, and said that's simply, and those people will simply get ahead all the time. And, and schools become almost a free-ring circus for how can we best entertain your children, keep them excited about coming to school, while we put them through batteries and batteries of testing, which is not educational at all. It doesn't help children on any level. It creates this weird kind of internalized universe. Well, we're helping your kid get to college, and this is all in college. College is just a whole battery of tests being done on your kid, and you go, well, sadly, it's not. Colleges so much decry the fact that most high schools do an absolutely wretched job of any kind of preparation for college, which is also kind of a fairyland, It doesn't reflect reality either. Your college experience bears little resemblance to your work experience. Work by its nature, well, unless you go into an extremely large corporation. Work doesn't bear, college doesn't prepare you for work. The only way they can do it is to offer you credit, college credit, for going to work, called field placement. I did a lot of field placement in my last 2 years of college, and I found that the most instructive, getting away from the classroom. Not to denigrate those who were trying to teach me, knowing that they were simply trying to obey an agenda, stuff like that. Huh. Four, that's good. Am I late? And so anyway, yeah, I said, the support of an institution like school ends up having a lot more to do with keeping jobs in a town, you know, justifying increasing public expenditure on it, you know, the actual education of young minds, you know, if you were to put what I think, if we were to be honest about where it falls in what is basically important in a school like Superintendent's Day, it's about zero. He doesn't care about that particularly. You know, in fact, he doesn't have to care about that. There's enough of a mechanism already built into the system of doing stuff like that. He's much more interested in complying with federal mandates on making sure these tests get done, making sure the school building is up to code. You know, and as he focuses on that, well, the principals start to focus on that. As the principals start to focus on that, because it seems much more tied to their success as a principal or as an administrator, it starts to filter down to the teachers. The teachers who are the most successful and that will stay the longest and will accomplish and will, you know, be the most successful, quote successful, is going to be the one that somewhat abandons interest in your children's personal growth and is far more interested in scoring political points with administration and spending more time doing that and doing a better job of justifying that. You know, it all ends up being kind of a weird game. This is, as I'm coming to the end of my thing, and I want to get off of just focusing on schools, but it's just the most, I think it's the most in-your-face, it has been for me, example of how the institutionalization of almost any activity, any pursuit, anything, any endeavor becomes a horrible thing, you know. And ends up not doing what you had wanted it to do ever. That's why I'm a big fan, you know, when I was in child care, I was a big fan of the family daycare home. You know, parents could exert tons of influence over it. The most effective way they could influence it is that there were always a large number of family daycare homes. And you could choose among them. You know, I am a huge proponent of voting with your feet. You know, I like this, I like that. Vote with your feet. Of course, it's being killed, you know. I said, and there was various reasons why there would never be a lot of family daycare homes. Number one, it wasn't going to, you know, it isn't able to make a lot of money for anybody. You really have to put aside the profit motive to do that, and thank God for people that do. Because, you know, because those are the best places. You know, you can say, well, my child care person doesn't have a PhD, and you go, you know what, that's not, as far as I'm aware, that isn't even part of the calculation of what good care and early education even looks like, you know. To be well educated isn't even on the radar screen for what produces better children is the educational attainment of the person giving the the giving the care, giving the service. You know, as always, the absolute best thing, and I was somewhat saddened when I read an article from Germany. You now have the stay-at-home mommy proposal, and that's a denigrated thing. Their thing says that women are worthless until they are in the workforce. And that staying at home is a pathetic thing to do, which I disagree with wholeheartedly. And say that, you know, where a large institutional child care center being run by people with PhDs and with a very well regulated and ultimately certified and a highly certified and accredited center that serves hundreds of children is ultimately a worse environment than a family daycare home run by practically anybody but one that cares about children. But that even better than those circumstances would be I'll indicate my biases, a mother staying at home with her children. It's, you know, there is absolutely no compare. No comparison at all. The longer a child can stay with their mother and receive education, training, love, compassion, all these things from their mother, the better people they will be. You know, I know there's no study, there's no statistic as far as I'm aware of that would support such an idea, but that's okay. I'm still a supporter of it. And we'll give it the credence of an established truth. And that the longer you can keep up this circumstance, the better off your child will be. You know, is it tied up with how good the family is? Yes. Of course it is. You know, have this situation with a drug strung out mother is a bad situation and probably worse than sticking a child in an institution. But the fact that this is that such institutionalization, starting to freeze out because it's cold, is the norm, is the established, this is the way it's supposed to be done. Honestly, all it does is it says that we expect the worst of people. And we force everybody into the straitjacket of, you're coming from a sucky family. Thank goodness, let me tell you, the best legislation that was ever passed anywhere was homeschooling laws. You know, the more lenient those homeschooling laws are, the better they are. I am blessed to live in New Mexico, where, number one, they have very lenient homeschooling laws, and number two, for what little that they want to try to enforce, they have no enforcement mechanism to enforce it. It's beautiful. Beautiful. It's wonderful. The tax scheme here is particularly good. You know, almost every other criteria for which a place would be desirable, New Mexico scored poorly. But for this one thing, I think people should come to places like New Mexico. It's you know, this is your family will blossom in this sort of a situation. And you know, I I guess if there is an anti that I have in life that's stronger than any other, you know, and that I don't, you know, I don't have a lot of antis. I have mostly a nons. I don't want to be associated with a lot of things. Anti means that you actually are against them. You actually would put forth a little effort to see this thing go away. In my libertarian mind, I said, this is definitely one of the biggest things that makes me say, oh yes, I am a libertarian, and I will firmly stay that way, is that I am anti-institution. I am not an institutional person. And I do not think the answer to anybody's problems is to be found, you know, generally in an institution. The only time an institution is better than a non-institution is when the non-institution is so utterly screwed up, you know, like the whole drug strung out mother. That's the only time when an institution would do a better job. The only time. And to think that we've put forth this institution as superior to all other forms, it says, is sickening. When it's only better than probably the absolute worst. The absolute worst. And, of course, the whole thing of all the really crazy ideas that get purported politically, you know, in the halls of legislatures and in the offices of governors and places like that, those get predominantly promulgated through public institutions, you know. And to fight against that kind of strident institutionalism, I think is a noble fight. Anyway, so there you go. That's what Jay has to say today. And I'm kind of on the downhill side here, turning up to the street where my house is, and just a few more minutes left, and there's really nothing more to say. You're listening to Jason Nemiro, and I'm walking in the morning. There's no title to it. Come and listen to it. Come and watch it. Anyway, have a great day. As soon as I can get this thing to shut off, my frozen up body.